Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is your co-host, Adia Sanders, and we are on our second week for our PRF session. Talking about for our Black History Month series, we're looking at today investing in ourselves. And on the line, we have Saeed Abdul-Kabir. For this month's series, you know, we're going to talk about on the PRF table how hashtag Black Money Matters for our series. But again, tonight, we're going to be focusing on how our investing in ourselves has an impact within the Black community and also at the micro level and in society and the world as a whole at the macro level. We're excited to have Saeed on with us tonight. We call him the professor, very passionate about every topic that you could imagine. He is an educator, and as we talk about issues that most people would shy away from or would only want to just have a dialogue, but no follow-up, no plan, no actions to go with the conversation, we'd like to change that up on tonight. We're going to have a dialogue and we're going to talk, but we also want to have action to go behind it. What are you going to do? What are we doing to help us as Black people? I want to help those people that we know that are Black, if you are on the call and you are not of African-American descent, that you can help them invest in themselves by showing them exactly what it is that they need to do by highlighting some areas. And so it is important that we invest in ourselves, but it's also important to be aware of how we need to invest, what we need to invest, and are we going to allow people to challenge us in those areas that we would not normally be challenged in or allow anyone to enter into. One of the things on tonight that I thought was just very important to discuss was kind of just like a movie, you know, the movie may start in present day telling you, hey, this is what the current situation is. But how many of you know that there is a past? And so we're not going to, this is not what the show is going to be centered around, but I do want to read something for you from a friend of mine who hopefully will be on the show tonight. He talked about I thought it was key to just talk about just for a little bit the economics in Africa prior to 1500. And if you don't know the significance of 1500, that is when slavery first began that we have on record. As far as Africans being taken from Africa over to the New World, you know, as America. But one of the things that he said that really helped me to understand how our Black money matters is that when you looked at the tribes and the villages, they mostly traded amongst themselves, and they shared whatever resources of value that they possessed. Not necessarily was it the commonwealth, but it was communally, especially making it accessible for those in need. Having that bit of knowledge, as we fast forward to the 21st century, we see that same behavior, those same characteristic traits in our community in the 21st century. We see that, you know, whether we are middle class or, you know, living in the projects, if I got it, you got it. We establish relationships, and that's what we see prior to 1500, what was going on in economically. Also just taking into consideration, you know, that some of the constraints that limited, in a full economic system that impacted, you know, the different regions and tribes and villages were, you know, natural terrain features such as the rivers and jungles and deserts and mountains. But what I think, you know, what is the key takeaway is how they worked together as a community and traded amongst themselves. Also just understanding how this information was passed down. And so you see some of our spending habits and how we grocery shop and the clothes that we wear and the cars that we drive have been handed down to us inadvertently or intentionally from what we saw our parents do, what we saw our aunts and uncles do, or the lack thereof. And so I think it's, you know, important that we capture what are some of those traits and behaviors and ideologies that are impacting America, Black Americans in the 21st century that have roots that tie back to Africa pre-1500, pre-slavery. Now that you have that information, what we're going to do is just begin to delve into the show. And I promise you tonight, y'all, the gloves are coming off. We'll probably have a mouth guard, but the gloves are coming off. And just like I think the commentator said many years ago in the boxing match, you know the rules, there are no rules. Well, we're not, you know, intentionally trying to punch each other in the eye or anything or hit below the belt, but we want to be challenging on tonight. We want to be thought-provoking. We want to have a positive dialogue that is going to impact and change lives. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to my brother, I call him my cousin, to Saeed, so that he can go ahead and open up this show for us on tonight as we delve into the topic for Black History Month, investing in ourselves. Take it away, Saeed.
Well, thank you. First and foremost, I have to give all praise and thanks to God. You know, there's nothing that we can do, will do, or ever be able to do without him in our corner, without him in our thoughts. As I like to say, God has to be our steering wheel, not our spare tire. So with saying that, I first ask God to forgive me for any mistakes I may make. Those are the shortcomings of myself. And anything that everyone or anyone gets from this, it is a blessing truly from God. I'm going to say, one, I want to thank you for the opening up with the history lesson, because that is part of the narrative that we have to start instilling in ourselves, in our children, in our conversations. We have to start connecting back to the things that we as a people, as African Americans primarily, but as minorities as a whole, we need to get back to those things that made us strong. You know, I was looking at, as we were talking about different things, I was looking up various communities that were strong, where we were strong, or different times in history where we were strong. You know, we can talk about the Chicago race riots, we can talk about Greenwood, we can talk about Knoxville, we can talk about New York City, Redwood, the Black Wall Street. We can talk about various different times in history where we had strong communities, and I'm not going to talk about what happened to the communities. That's for another show. But one of the central things that I found in my research is that we were investing in ourselves. In each of those times when we were growing, we were investing in ourselves. We weren't investing in ourselves in the way that we see today. You know, we'll go out and buy something fleetingly, but we were investing in the community as a whole. We were investing in making sure that our children had a good education. It wasn't their education or someone else's blueprint. It was the education that we knew our children needed, not only to survive within the context of their living experience, but to learn the material. You think of all the African Americans who invented stuff. You think of all the people. You think of Frederick Douglass and all these people who got accolades and education beyond when we didn't even have schools that were organized as we have them now. They were getting education because the community invested in those individuals. If you think about during the Black Panther movement, one of the things that made the Black Panther movement not only a scary thing for everyone else, but what made it such an impactful thing in our community is because their focus was building the community. Their focus was not doing it the white way, but doing it the right way for African Americans. And you look at the matter of fact, if for those of us who may be from the Philadelphia area, if you remember back in the late 60s, early 70s, we had a vibrant community all up and down Ridge Avenue in Philadelphia, where we had black cleaners, we had corner stores, we had markets, we had variations of barbershops, we had various different things. And at the center of all of these things were two things: our education, meaning we were teaching our children, and our faith. And I say faith in a very broad, a blanketing thing. I'm not putting any particular label on it. But our faith in the fact that we recognize that God was central to what we needed to get done. Now, we can move forward or backwards. We can look at the Civil Rights Movement. During the Civil Rights Movement, yes, we were fighting for civil rights. But what we were fighting for was a community establishment where black people could thrive within the context of equality. Start off with all those different things is because when we fast forward and look at where we are today, this is the question I have that I've posed to many people. Where today, in today's time, do we invest in ourselves? Look at our schools. Look at our neighborhoods. And I'm not saying that all communities are equal, but in general, when we go across the board, our schools are underfunded. We can arguably say why, but here's my question to you two ladies and whoever else is online. Why are we not going in and investing in our children's education? How much does it cost to buy a textbook? How much does it cost to make sure that your child in your class has the books he needs or she needs for their education? I ask our churches and our neighborhoods or our places of worship or our masjids or whatever places of worship, how can they be multi-million dollar establishments but our communities are poor? I throw another question. How can we have $1 trillion of spending power but have no businesses within our communities? And the reason is because we do not, one, value ourselves, we do not value education, but we've also bought into the idea that white is right. And this is not to go in and make this about black and white in the context of racism, but in the context of resources. When you have unlimited resources, and I don't mean just from a financial perspective, but when you know that you can walk into pretty much any business and you will be judged by the merit of what you bring and not the color of your skin or not the name of you, not your name for which is on a piece of paper, that gives you a level of confidence where you can now answer the questions without being defensive. You can go in there without worrying about what are you going to say the right thing or are you going to do it the right way. That opens up that just taking that pressure off alone is a world of benefit. So to bring you ladies back into the conversation, let's go with question number one. Why are our schools as poor as they are?
I think this is Adia. I think, honestly, you know, we don't have, I'm not going to say we don't have people, but we don't have enough people advocating for our schools. And I just want to just kind of talk about when we say talking about investing in ourselves, and looking, saying our schools, I think we have a right to say that, one, they're our schools because they're in our community, regardless of who goes to the school, they're in our community. And I think that the biggest piece is no advocates. And so if you don't have anybody advocating or enough people advocating, basically what you're saying is that, yeah, we know the schools are like this, but we're not going to do anything about it, which leads into
the always the conversation and always the talking and the negativity and the negative responses about how things are the way that they are and what this person isn't doing, what that person isn't doing, but never understanding that you have a vital role that you can play by being an advocate. So if you don't see something as being right, then do something about it. And so the challenge is, what are you going to do besides noting what's, clearly obvious, what are you going to do? I think the other part to that, too, is that, you know, it's so easy for people to say how something is and without having to contribute to making it better, because a lot of times when it comes to investing in ourselves, you don't know how to do that. You don't know, what does investing in myself mean? Because somebody may say, well, you know, I've invested in myself. I have a degree. But are you working in that field to make somebody's life better? Are you giving back? Or you may hear people say, well, I work all day long, so I don't have time to go out there to the school and volunteer or raise my concern and be a part of a committee or chair a committee. It'll go back to excuses. So having enough advocates and then also having people that are willing to share the workload, I think, is what is needed when we look at investing in ourselves from a Black Money Matters perspective, because now when you have somebody investing and being an advocate, you can utilize the resources in your community, whether it's human resources, financial resources, or possessions resources, to get what you need. Maybe there's somebody in the community that's a grant writer or knows where to get a grant writer at, and they can write a grant for the school and get money for the school, or going to the school board meetings or going to the city hall meetings and saying, we demand that money be poured into our schools, and find out why money isn't being poured into the school. Maybe it's just a lack of tutors, and so the kids are failing, and so there's a need not to pour money into the school, because instead of getting what you need to build up the kids and the curriculum and to make sure that they have what they need to be contributing members of society, now money is being taken away because students aren't passing tests and all of these other things and so forth and so on. I do, just before I hand it over to the next person that's going to talk, is just to say, if you do have a comment, if you would press 1 on your dial pad, that way we will see it light up on the switchboard and you can participate in this conversation on tonight. Again, press 1 on your dial pad to have a seat at the table, but also to be able to speak on the topic of investing in ourselves.
Okay,
I'm turning it over.
Okay, this is Mary Ann. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I was talking to one of the sisters that called me, and she's really having some problems and education for her child. And so I asked her, I said, well, do you become involved in your child's education? You know, her child is very smart, but it has trouble reading. So I told her, I said, you won't have to take out time and help the child to read. And so I heard the child, and it's just amazing. The little, he's so smart. And he read and just gave the whole content, and he explained things for me, you know. And I said, but he does bad on his test. So I told him, I said, what you're going to have to do, because he says his hands get all sweaty and everything, and, you know, he gets nervous. So I told her, I said, what you're going to have to do is take out the time with him and go over each sentence and see if he understands that one particular sentence and what happened in the sentence and everything, you know. And she said, well, I just get upset when he, you know, I've had him ask him 2 or 3 times, you know. And so I told her, I said, well, then you can't expect for the teachers to do it all, you know. I said, she sent you, told you why your child is failing. And so the bottom line is that we have... we that have children in school need to get involved in our children's education. And there was another mother with the same attitude. I don't have time to go to the PTA meetings or whatever, and they're not even working. And so I find that, you know, people just, we have to, someone has to have a desire, you know, and these are our children, and we have to have a desire for our children to learn and find out why the child is not learning, or even get them a tutor. Because you can go to the community schools, and they, you can find someone there that would help tutor your child. There's just no excuse for our children being exceptionally smart in every area except for reading, and I'm finding that to be an issue there. And the parents are just not getting in there and involved and say, well, the teacher say this and the teacher say that, and maybe the teacher don't like my son, you know, but the teacher explaining to you that your child had problems, so it's up to you to help your child, you know. So I think when it comes to education, we have to want to help our first start at home. Help our children at home, because a lot of times people get on boards and get on all these other, in these other organizations, and their children are failing. That's all I have to contribute for now.
And both of your answers are to the core of the reason why I asked it. And the reason why I'm asking this is because we don't invest in ourselves. We don't invest in our children. But it, as you said, it has to start at home. Here's my thing. We've been sold a bad bit of goods in this society. We've been sold two things that I believe was systematically put into place to keep us from doing the kinds of historical things that have gotten us to where we need to be. It keeps us from organizing. We were sold the idea that we're equal, and I'm telling you right now, we're not. Yes, we're equal in the eyes of God, but right now, we are not equal in this country. And for anyone who believes that we are, look at the number of people that are dying at the hands of police officers. Look at the number of us where the laws have been set up so that if you have a nickel bag of weed, you get a felony charge, but you can be of a fairer skin with a pound of weed and you get probation. The most common sentence that an African American young person will get in the jail system is a felony drug charge. That's the most universal charge that happens to young African American, particularly men, but now Hispanic men, African American females across the board. But the only charge, felony charge that will keep you from getting an education is drugs. Now, we can arguably say why, but the point is this. I could mass kill 100 people and still go to college. But if I sell a nickel bag of weed, or if I'm found with a nickel bag of weed, I can't go to college on a federal dime. So we were sold an idea that we are equal. The sooner we get that out of our concept, and start working as if we are not equal, and start focusing on the things that make us strong, we'll start first with education. We don't need an advocate for education. And this is not to say we don't need advocates, but this is my thing. You have a son. I have a son. I know my son is not reading in school. Now, we can arguably say, let me back up for a second. I pose this question to every class I teach. And majority of the students in the class are African American, and like 99% of them are minorities. And I ask them all the time, you know, how many of you are invested in your child's education? Everyone raises their hand. How many of you want to make sure your child goes well? Everyone raises their hand. How many of you want to make sure your child get good grades? Everyone raises their hand. So then I say to them, well, why are our schools doing so poorly? Because what it is that we have lip service to it. Like the young lady said, the young lady said, you know, I want them to read better and so forth, but I don't have time. If education is most important, if you can take off because you got that hangover, if you can take off because you want to go see that show, if you can spend $20 or $30 a week on miscellaneous stuff from the bar to the whatever, then you can go out and make sure that your children have the textbooks that even though the school is supposed to be providing them. That's not my argument. We keep waiting for the other people to give us something. We'll be waiting forever for that that acre, those 10 acres and a mule. We'll be waiting forever because they ain't going to never give it to us. Yes, we could arguably say we deserve it. Yes, we do. You know, we built this country on our backs, literally on our backs. But if we are waiting around for them to truly give us the equality that we so-called claim we deserve, we will never get it. And because what they've done is they've sold us on this idea that we're equal, we stop fighting for equality. Because we've sold on the idea, you know what, we got a black man in the White House. Yes, we did, but they treated him like he was dirt. Yet many of us still complaining because he didn't release JoJo from jail. Because we don't understand that the system is not designed to be equal for everyone. It's not. It never was. Capitalism is a system that is designed on having a working class. And without a working class, capitalism falls by the wayside. You know, they argue about immigrants. They're not really mad that immigrants come in because who's going to scrub them toilets? Who's going to dig those dirts? Who's going to dig the grounds? Who's going to do the different things that they need to be done? No, it's a good political ploy. It's a good political argument, but it is just what it is. It is the fact that we need a working class. And right now, the people who keep offering their backs to this capitalism system is us. And the reason why is because they know we're not going to value it. Every time we put together a particular strong movement to move our people, they don't fight the movements anymore. You know what they do? They monopolize the movement. They change the perspective of the movement so that we lose sight of what's in front of us. You know, there was I remember someone telling me about an organization that was started for black engineers. An organization that was started for black engineers. And so and I don't know if this is true. I've been trying to find the information, but I had this conversation with someone who was in the engineering field, and they said that however many decades ago, they started an organization for black engineers to help black engineers get more jobs. Well, over time, you know, we couldn't just focus on black engineers. We had to start letting in other into different nationalities and different people and so forth. Over the years, from what I was told, that now this organization, more other people get jobs through this organization than the black people they were supposed to serve. Because we keep buying into this idea that we have to assimilate when we can never assimilate. And this is, and please, don't anyone take this as a separatist kind of movement. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is why can't we establish the same kind of communities, not neighborhoods, not pockets of individuals, but communities that other ethnic groups have. The Jewish population has their own massive communities, which they circle around. Even the LGBT has their own communities now. You have the various Asian communities, and you have the various Hispanic communities. I was talking to Eddie earlier today, and just talking about my wife. She's Puerto Rican, and we go her neighborhood. Now they may not be the most wealthiest neighborhood, however, we know that they have their corner stores, they have their cleaners, they have their nail salons, they have their hairdressers. They have all of those, and they shut the streets down for the Puerto Rican Day parade. I mean, they shut off miles of highway that they have Philadelphia police blocking it off for them. They have numerous businesses, which we could arguably say are the poor businesses, but they're their businesses. It's still their businesses. It still holds their cultural values. Now, we could argue, you know, we can still go through the financial things of it, but here's the point I'm trying to make. Until we start investing in ourselves in that same kind of intentionality, we're never going to be able to do anything about ourselves. And it starts with you going, you parent who's listening, you father who's listening, you aunt who's listening, going up to that school. I'm not trying to tell you to boycott. I'm not even telling you to go and have a big argument. Yeah, I want you to have one, but the one of the very simplest things you can do is just go make sure they have textbooks. Your child. Because if your child does it, maybe your neighbors might do it. And that's how the process works. If you're waiting for someone else to walk up there and do it for you, then you're going to continue to watch our schools suffer. Let's move on from education for a minute. Let's look at our religious establishments. And this is across the board. This is no pointing to any particular religion. But here's the thing I'm asking us. Why are our churches rich and our neighborhoods poor? We got mega churches that cost millions of dollars. And you know what they remind me of? They remind me of when we used to see in the movies of how the church used to ride through the towns and collect the taxes on the people. And the cardinals and everybody was living rich in the castle, but all the people were poor. That's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of the time where we will spend our dollars, and I'm not saying we should not give to God, but we've given to God in the wrong way. My point is that if we're going to use Scripture as our foundation, let's look at the people who lived Scripture. Let's look at the actions that they did. You know, those who follow Jesus, if you want to invoke his name and everything, think about what he did as a person. He fed people. He went into the community. Not only did he say you need to understand and follow God, but you also need to take care of each other. Because he said he did not come to destroy the law. He came to uphold the law, but to show you the humanity side that comes with the law. We have to go back to the things that made us vibrant. God can be central in our lives, but if we're not taking care of the community around us, then what has the church done for us? If a family is starving in the block, but the church has gold door frames, something's wrong. Something systematically wrong. And the reason is we bought into that, I hate to say it, but the white is right kind of mentality. We believe we can just throw our money out there because it looks like I got money. That means I got money. No, it doesn't. It means you're just poor. That's what it means. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Shai, I love every point that you have made, and definitely, you know, what comes to mind, you know, even when she's saying that white is right, that mentality, it is definitely a psychological behavior that most people probably aren't even aware that they're doing. It's been, you know, so many times people are just culturally conditioned to believe that this is the right way. And so you begin to look at other people that don't look like you, and you see how different their lives are from yours and how you wish you had that. So you begin to subconsciously or knowingly begin to do those things, not understanding the system. And I think a lot of times, you know, if we understood the system, and if we also understood, again, the reason why I brought up what the economics, just a snapshot of what the economic system was in Africa, was that they understood their value and their worth so much so that they could easily give up their possessions and their resources and the finances that they did have, to where not always was it financial wealth, not always was it wasn't monetary, but they could easily give it up because they wanted everybody to have. What would I be like, or what kind of person would I be if I made sure that I had, my family had, but my brother or my sister right next to me doesn't have anything, and I have enough that I can share with them? When you understand about investing in yourself and why your black money matters, then you will understand that you can't afford to have the latest shoes and the latest sunglasses, but you don't have health insurance. When you understand the purpose and the reasons of why it's important to invest in yourself, you understand that you see other kids having to go to school and they got run-down sneakers. You understand that you cannot afford to just live a life that is just not even where you're not even thinking about, let alone today, tomorrow. And a lot of times when you look at the white is right mentality, it is, if they're doing it this way, it has to be right. And I think when you understand the historical context before 1500, pre-slavery, then you can understand some of the behaviors that we do identify today where, when something happens. We saw in Baltimore, we saw in L.A. with Rodney King, how we're able to come together because we get sick and tired of all of the maltreatment. You understand that you have to invest in yourself. But if you don't invest in yourself first, you can't help anybody else. It's like the saying, I can only take somebody where I've been. And if where I've been has been in the same neighborhood, then it is definitely hard to bring somebody else to the next level because you're not even there. And I think it's important, you know, that we look at how investing in ourselves is so important. When we look at the financial aspect, you know, we're talking about hashtag Black Money Matters, you know. If the black community understands how investing in ourselves can help us financially, we can just talk about that for a moment, Saeed and Aunt Mary, then we would understand that in Black America, I mean, I read an article where one lady states that if Black America counted as an independent country, its wealth would rank 11th in the world. However, African Americans continue to squander their vast spending power, relegating blacks to economic slavery instead of financial freedom, according to several consumer reports detailing the use of the cash in the black community. To me, that is telling. That tells Adia that black people are not investing in themselves because they're getting finances but not even understanding that as soon as they get it, you go and spend it in somebody else's community that doesn't look like you because of the reason why, because it doesn't exist. I asked the question, you know, earlier in just a dialogue that me and Saeed were having because he probably loves history just as much as I do. But why wasn't Black Wall Street rebuilt again? If it meant so much to have your own, to invest in yourself and to invest in your community and to invest in people that look just like you and I, why wasn't it rebuilt again? Why is it that we are comfortable spending our money with everyone else except our own? Why in the world in L.A., instead of going to somebody else's community, which is still wrong altogether, will we tear up our own community and wake up weeks later and don't have a mom-and-pop's pharmacy to go get our medicine? Now we got to go to the very people that we know don't like us. The mentality and the psychological mindset has got to change, and it does start by investing in yourself. But if you don't know how to invest, just like people don't know about starting a bank account, you don't know how can you invest in yourself? And so there's a lack of education. Like you said, we know the school system is in our communities are just the worst of the worst. But nobody's, not one parent is going out there to find out the book that you can probably get on Amazon for pennies on a dollar, a used book that's brand new.
Yep. I'm going to say, I want to respond to one of your questions, and I think that we all understand how the mentality happened. You know, one of the saddest things that happened during slavery and even from every generation after that, they've wiped away our cultural connection to allow us to go forward and so forth. But beyond that, here's the thing I think we want to do. One of the things I don't want to do, and we only have an hour and maybe a couple of minutes, and I don't want to become the boys on the corner where we only complain about what's wrong. What I want to do is change gears a little bit and say this. You mentioned about how, you know, spending in our communities. And, you know, within that same article that you had read, because you know you pass it on to me, there's another point I wanted to bring out and think so we can kind of get it, so we can move forward, so I can start on another point. But to say this, currently, according to the NAACP, currently a dollar circulates in the aging communities for a month. In Jewish communities, approximately 20 days. In white communities, 17 days. How long does a dollar circulate in the black community? Roughly 6 hours. Black Americans' buying power is at $1.1 trillion, yet only 2 cents of every dollar black spends in this country goes to black-owned businesses. Now, there's three things I want to point out about that. Number one, we have to have black-owned businesses before they can be spent on it. So that means we need to start really investing in how can we get more of our brothers and sisters and families within the businesses. That's number one. Number two, we have to also start thinking about what do we value. And this is my thing to my various sisters, and particularly sisters right now. This is not pointing you out, but just to go and say, all right, who's doing your hair? Who's doing your nails? If you think about that money that you'd spend every week, every month, and so forth. Now, I'm not saying don't get your hair done. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that you don't go out there and buy your hair, because once you buy it, it's your hair. I'm not saying that either. But my point is this. If you're buying hair that's not coming off of the head of a black person, which is not, it's either grown hair, manufactured hair, which is manufactured in some Asian country somewhere, or shaved off of some horse somewhere, you're still spending your money outside of the community.
Exactly.
If you're getting your nails done, you know what? Half of you know how to do nails. Open up a salon. Go to the same people that's going to do it. Who can do those same nails for you? Do it within your own family. Hire your cousin. Tell your cousin, you know what? You know how you've been to the nail salon 120 times. I even know how to do nails, and I'm a man. Pay your cousin to do your nails. The point is let's start working small. Let's not try to go and rebuild. If we want to rebuild Wall Street, the black Wall Street, we're going to have to start with not just one brick at a time. We're going to have to start at one little hole at a time. Because the system, again, is not designed for us to be able to just make it happen overnight. So here's the thing I'm going to say. I'm going to give you some takeaways from this for everyone who's listening. I'm going to give you some takeaways that are small things that we can start doing to start changing the tide. Number one, for our families out there, make education important. For all of you who don't like math or don't like school or don't share that with your children. Because once you share your dislike for it, they're not going to embrace it. So it doesn't matter if you think school is important. If you're not making school important within your house, then you may not be able to go and do the new math or any of the math that they're throwing at these kids these days. But what you can do is Google it. You got a cell phone. I'm pretty sure you got a smartphone. You'll look up the latest dress. You'll go on Facebook and post, and you can Google how to solve a math problem. Number one. Number two, make sure your kids have the materials in school. If it means you got to spend the $20, $30, $40, if you can't go and spend it somewhere else, spend it on your child that way. Don't buy them the $200 sneakers before you buy them the $50 book.
Exactly.
Invest in your child in those cases. Now, let's also start looking at some of the broader things that we can do. Let's get back into doing some of the things that Sister Mary said. She said, read. I'm asking, we tend to say we read, and it's another thing that's interesting. I was talking to my class, and when I asked them, how many of your children read? And so everyone said, my child reads. And when I asked them, how many of your children are in their teens and read, half the hands go down. So my question is, what happened to reading? Just simple reading. Simple reading beyond the fast 3-minute sessions that we see on the various different things. My point I'm trying to make on this part is, as we start talking about investing in ourselves, they don't have to be these mega million kind of changing the world events. They start small. They start small with everyone sitting on this call right now. You know, how many of our young black males are in a school setting? And I'm not talking about young meaning children. I'm talking about 17 to 30. I've been teaching for 8 years now. I've teached developmental math series through various colleges. Do you know, over the 8 years that I've been teaching, less than 1% of the males, and less than 1% of the people coming into my classes have been males. 8 years of teaching.
Wow.
They're predominantly young to middle-aged African-American women.
Well, Saeed, let me ask you this question. You know, when we talk about investing in ourselves, if somebody, and I don't want to, like, already ask the question, what does the investing look like? You know, because a lot of times people will look at where their environment that they live in to make, as an excuse. And so maybe for some people it is legitimate, but what does, like, is that something that the individual is doing on their own? Because I think a lot of times people feel like, you know, I don't have anywhere to go, I don't have anybody to go to, or this is just, you know, how life is. What does that investing look like for somebody who has never really thought about investing in themselves, or who thinks that this investing that we're talking about is, you know, it's almost borderline being a selfish person and just making sure that they're good while neglecting other responsibilities for people?
Well, I think that investing in yourself, I mean, I think it comes from a couple of different ways. Number one, you can never truly be, I mean, you can truly be selfish. That's not what I'm going to say. I don't want to go and make you say that. But let's just stay talking about investing in yourself. Let's think about just some of the smaller things. Number one, you mentioned it before. Do we have health insurance? And I'm not talking about when we get 50, 60, 70 years old. I'm talking about you 20, 30 years old, 20-year-olds out there, 30-year-olds out there. Have you bought health insurance? Now, let's think about it from a thing where we talk about the average 20-year-old African-American male, or the average African-American male, what they say, what, one out of every five will die before they're 25, you know, so forth and so on. Let's just assume that is true. If that 25-year-old or 20-year-old had health insurance, and let's assume that he was thinking about this, he had health insurance, do you know his children would be taken care of? Then his children wouldn't have to worry about it. These are some of the smaller things. And I'm not trying to think it from a death-only perspective, but I'm saying we need to start thinking about some of the smaller things that help make our lives easier. Number one, investing in yourself by i.e. going and getting, making sure you have insurance. Once you turn 18 years old, there's no reason why you shouldn't have insurance. And if you don't know where to get it, you can look me up on Facebook, you can contact me, and I will help you get it. That's number one. Number two, getting a bank account. So many of us spend our money at the check cashing places, we get payday loans, or we go and we get our money put on a payday card or whatever it's called, but they don't have a presence. They don't have an economic presence. Do you know how much money a person would save? This is something simple. Here's the general rule. The average check cashing place is charged anywhere between 1% to 5% of your check. You can direct deposit your check into a simple checking account, simple savings account with no fees today. There's multiple banks out there that have no fee checking accounts. Deposit it in there. Even if you take the money all out at one time, if you let's just say the average person – let's just say you got a $500 check, all right? So we multiply a $500 check times 1%, right? So that's $5. So we multiply that $5 times 52. That means they done spent $260 just to get their own money. $260. And that's if they're only charging you 1%. Imagine if they were charging you 2 or 3% to cash a check. That $260 is a textbook. It's your insurance payment for your health insurance. It's your life insurance payment. You know, I was talking to a young guy who's my financial advisor, and guess what? He's a young white guy, late 20s. He's already bought an insurance policy that by the time he reaches 35 to 40, that policy will have matured enough that he will never have to pay into it again, and he could pretty much roughly borrow $20,000 per year. And he could take $20,000 off of that insurance policy from the time he died and still have the policy's face value for his death. That's the kind of information that's not out there that we need to start looking into. Don't go to the ATMs that charge you fees. You don't need your money that bad. Use banks that will not charge you fees and so forth. Those are small things. Again, like I said, you mentioned it. They could Google, go online. You can get math books. You can get textbooks. You can get all the things your children need. And in this day and age of electronics and not spend, you could pretty much finance your whole child's, I'm talking about elementary school children from first through 12th grade. You could finance them and make sure they had every book they need, regardless of what the school's offering them or not, and basically spend less than $1,000 over their 12 years of being in school. Let's take college for an example. So many of our children believe that we can. We should be going to college right like everyone else. Yes, you should be going to college. But do you know that you can save yourself over $20,000 to $30,000 of student loan debt by just going to a community college your first 2 years? And here's the thing I tell kids all the time. English 101. It's English 101 is the basic English class that you need to take for every major that's possible, that's out there. Any major that's out there, you have to take English 101. English 101 at the normal community college is only about roughly $200 to $300 according to where you're going. English 101 at the average state school is about $500 to $900 according to where you go. English 101 at some of the private schools start at $2,000 up to $3,000 for the same English 101. So let's not deter our students, our kids, from going to college. No, we want them to go to college. But we want them to go to college as it relates to our ability to make sure that they get into the game and get into the game correctly. You know what? Let's take it a step further. This is no offense to my young young people who want to be individual and so forth. But here's the thing you have to realize. If you already know that the color of your skin is going to be a hindrance, regardless if you understand that idea or not, why add to that by giving yourself other disadvantages, such as tattooing yourself all the way up through your neck and face, such as giving yourself an image that already is going to label you in such a way? And granted, we can arguably say you have the right to your freedom of speech, yes, and your freedom of look and your freedom of whatever, but the reality is this. We are not equal and we are not free.
I think, you know, just listening to everything that you said, Saeed, talking about the health insurance and the life insurance and just having, you know, paying for college, going to a community college versus a four-year college, I think at the end of the day, it goes back to
what Aunt Mary said was the education. And a lot of times education, you know, people look at education as being sitting in a classroom. But we're educated every single day. Education is just is getting knowledge. And if you don't know about life insurance or health insurance or community college versus going to a four-year college or university, there's so much information out there on the website, you know, to where you can Google life insurance and find out about the different policies that they have and if it's affordable, or talk to somebody that has the knowledge that is willing to be honest with you and to educate you so that you can make a good decision that will benefit you and your family. And I think that is the biggest piece, you know, that we sometimes lack or miss out on is getting the education. How easy is it for us to go in our phones and Google how to get to Daytona Beach or Freaknik or all these, you know, Bike Week in South Carolina, but we can't go online to look up how to get a textbook or to go to the local community college and find out how much the classes cost and how they can be paid. What I hear you saying is education. And if we're not allowing ourselves to be teachable and to get the information and apply the information, I think that's an important trait to have, is to, one, be teachable, to be coachable. And like, you know, Earl said on last week, get a mentor. The value of having a mentor, somebody that is going to stir you in the right direction, that you can just be honest about, and they're invested in your future because they know that you're invested in yours. And I think, you know, when we put the whole combination of that together, I think that it is definitely a recipe for success, at least at the very minimum, a start. And that's just, you know, the piece that I wanted to add.
I think that is true. I'm sorry, go ahead, Mary.
No, that's it.
I was going to say, no, I agree. And that's the end, again, but now let's take this back to the beginning. That was one of the characteristics of our neighborhoods. That was one, I mean, our communities. Yeah. We mentored each other. The neighbor down the street mentored you. The gentleman across the street who was the carpenter mentored you. The school teacher, she not only just came from class, but she would talk with the kids on the step or the stoop. They mentored you. See, that's the point that we keep. This brings us right back home nicely, and that is it. We've gotten away from the core aspects of what made our communities great.
Those are the kinds of things that we did.
Yes.
And I think also the other part, I can just, you know, just got like this vision of the people that lived in your community also worked in your community. I remember my mom telling me, you know, that her teachers, I mean, they didn't live three communities away or lived in the next neighboring city. They lived in her community. So her mom and her dad knew who the teacher was. So even, you know, people have said, I've heard them saying on talk radio about even with the police officers, you have police officers that are, you know, on the beat in a community where they know nothing about the people, nothing about them. And so when they see, you know, little JoJo on the corner, they don't know that little JoJo is mute. But when they think that he's up to no good, instead of, you know, having a rapport built, the first thing they do is shoot and kill little JoJo, and little JoJo would have never been able to say anything to defend him to defend himself. And so I think that's another added value that we no longer have in our community, is just those people who live in our community also worked in the community and vice versa. And we knew one another, and you definitely had that older person that can mentor and develop you and take a part in raising you so that you knew your worth. And you can, you know, say like Jesse Jackson used to say, you are somebody. I am somebody. Because they made you understand how important you were in your community. And so even if you never left your neighborhood, you knew that you had some worth, and you knew that you were valuable, so that when you did go outside of your community and people looked at you, they couldn't tell you anything different. They honestly couldn't tell you anything different because you knew who you were. You weren't trying to get your identity from somebody else who doesn't know you. And so I see that as a part of investing in ourselves too.
No, it is, and that is the point of that's where we have to get back to understanding that. As soon as we can't, we're transient now. We've gotten to be this, you know, we've gotten to adopt this idea that, you know, I can move anywhere, I can be any, I can do different things. And yes, you can, but when we do that without taking the hand of those behind us, we continue to perpetuate the cycle. How many of us graduate college and move back to our neighborhoods? Mm-hmm. Think about that. Mm-hmm. How many of us graduate college and move back to our neighborhoods? Now, the first thing is, I got my college because I want to get out the neighborhood. Yeah, but guess what? If you're not moving in back into another predominantly African-American or minority neighborhood, then you are contributing your money to some other community. We don't think about that. You know, ask yourself, you know, think about that. We want our children to get up. We want them to do better and to go and so forth. But here's what happens. When you take the smartest and brightest and you take them and you graduate them and then you move them into the more affluent, I'm not going to label it, but the affluent neighborhood, and they're not living in the neighborhood where we habitat, we are still contributing to taking away the wealth of our neighborhood. Think about it. And so the thing, it is a systematic approach that we have to start doing. You know, we have to start thinking about as we start moving, as we start reinvesting in ourselves, it has to be on multiple levels. Number one, we do need to start speaking out against the different things. We need to start educating each other. We need to not feel that we can't talk to our youth. We have to reach back and start talking to our youth. And this is a shout out. This is a straight shot at the men out here. Any male that is listening to this conversation, you need to be involved in the youth that are in your community. You have to be involved, especially if you are a person who's lived through some challenges and or has made it to a point. You have to be involved. You cannot no longer stand on the sideline. We have to start getting our men back involved in our families. Which means that some of our, and ladies, I was raised by females, so trust me, I know how hard it can be is to look at that man in the face and be like, oh my God, I'm going to strangle him. But the reality is this, if it's not done together, we can't do it. You go back to our communities. Let's go back and look at our communities. Let's go back and look at Black Wall Street. Let's go back and look at during the 70s, when the black men, let's go back and look at every great time in our history. When the civil rights movement was walking, they were walking. It wasn't women walking down the street. It was men and women. When you look at Black Wall Street, there were families living in those houses, investing in those businesses. It was mom and dad who owned the, you know, who was owning the store or the cleaners or the whatever that may be. When you look at the Black Panther movie. There was just as many brothers and sisters standing side by side fighting for what was right. You look at the Nation of Islam, and I don't follow their social political beliefs, but you have to give them credit. The one thing that they said was, "We are a proud people, and the black and the male and the female have to work together to make this thing work." Every successful community has always been built around the family unit. We have to start making sure that our males are back involved, even if it means swallowing a little bit of pride to make sure it happens. Even if it means men, you need to pull your pants up, you need to tighten that belt, and you need to figure out how it is that you can go and be a good example for not just your children, but the children in the community around us. We don't need some massive it doesn't take So it should not take, let me go back and say this, it should not take someone losing a life. It should not take someone closing a school. It should not take someone doing something massive for us to start realizing our value. And it doesn't take it to be a big thing. Small steps. Make sure your children have the books they need for school. No, it's not the school's responsibility. It's not the teacher's responsibility. It's your responsibility. Make sure that you are investing in yourself with health insurance and life insurance, not when you're 50, 60, and 70, when you're young, so that you can be able to enjoy your 60s and 70s without worrying about working until we're 75 and 80 because we can't afford retirement. We need to start looking at simple things like getting a bank account and not using the check cash in place, not using these payday places. Just get a simple bank account, deposit your money, even if you take every cent out. Let it go into the bank so you're not paying fees on that stuff. Don't use debit. Oh, here's a little thing I'm going to tell everybody. When you go to those stores, the Walmarts, the Targets, wherever they are, and you swipe your card, do not use debit. Use credit. If it's a Visa debit card, use credit. Here's the reason why. Number one, if your identity is stolen and you use your PIN, it's harder to get your money back if you use credit than if you use credit. Because if the general thought for the banks is if they got your PIN, then someone who knows you gave it to them. Doesn't mean you can't get your money back. It's just harder. Number two. Every time you swipe your card as debit, your bank, if they choose to, can choose to charge you a fee the same way they charge you a fee if you go use a foreign bank's ATM. And most people don't check their statements. They don't check that $2.50 that they got, even though the bank says, well, we're not going to charge you, but your bank can charge you. Always use credit because it's going to better save your identity and also saves you money down the road. These are small investment things. These are small things we can do to start investing in ourselves, investing in our communities, and start allowing ourselves to move in a better direction. But the very first thing is we have to get back to understanding what made us strong is what is the fact that we were a community, not a neighborhood. We were a community. What made us strong is that we did the things that would benefit us and not follow behind what society says is the right way or the way that should be done. And last but not least, we valued each other's presence and being in each other's presence. We don't value that anymore. How many times are we sitting out just having a conversation with our neighbor? And my final thought, because I don't want to hold this up too long, is this. We have to start holding our religious institutions responsible for our well-being. You want me to help you? You want me to help build the church? You need to help me build the community.
Saeed, I just thank you so much for everything that you shared. I think that everything that we've talked about tonight definitely has a place, and it would be our loss if we did not go back and listen and share this topic of investing in ourselves, because sometimes I think it's hard for people to invest in themselves when they've been discouraged, they've been living in poverty or downtrodden for so long. But I think it's important when we understand our value and understand our worth to know that at the end of the day, we have a responsibility to ourselves and that we can only take people where we have been. Does anybody have any comments that they'd like to share at this time?
Yes, I would like to comment one thing we have to feel good about ourselves, and it starts with our parents, you know, letting us know that we are somebody. And I saw this show where they were giving the dark-skinned girls tests, And they gave them a dark doll, and they gave them a white doll, and they asked them which one they would be, which one they wanted to be, and all of them chose the white doll. And so I was sitting there wondering, because she was, one was 6 years old. How did this, and you know, and today is the 20th, you know, century. So how did this get implanted in her, and when, you know, in her mind, you know what I mean? And she said, because good ones say good, these white girls look better than she does. And they asked her what she wants. She said she was white, you know. And so we have to be careful how we talk around our children, you know, about another community. And so they're going to give these little girls some help and everything. But if you don't put into our children that they are somebody, and it doesn't matter what color they are. And I remember when I was in the first grade, I could not understand why I couldn't get up and, you know, wash the board, and everybody, you know, and other people had turns. And that was because of my, and I didn't really realize it. But I felt bad because why am I not getting up, taking a turn, you know? And it was because of my color. Then I had, and I'm not, you know, my complexion, and I'm not really what you say dark skin. Now I also dealt with children asking me, "Is my father white?" Said I tell you have pretty hair, you must have a white father. So all these things have been told to the children. Because I was 6 years old. So as parents, we have to be careful how we talk about the other communities, because it does impact as you get older, you start feeling insecure about yourself, you know, and you do wish you were another color, because you see that color get things done, and people like that color better than your color. So we have to sit down and teach our children about our culture and that we are somebody, but we cannot ever forget where we came from. Amen.
Thank you so much, Aunt Mary, for all of the comments. Thank you, Saeed, for just coming on. We thank you, our PRF family and listeners, for just hanging out with us on tonight and taking a seat at the table. I think a couple of things that we definitely can agree on is that in order for us to move forward, we have to begin investing in ourselves. But I'd like to add that we have to be okay with it. We can't feel bad when we take the time to educate ourselves and to speak up and to speak out and to do things for our families that are going to leave a legacy and a lasting impact. We thank you so much for joining us on tonight. We thank you for just listening. We thank you for sharing. We thank you for just speaking from your heart. We ask that you will join us next Thursday for another dynamic show, another lineup on hashtag Black Money Matters as we do our Black History series for this month. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great night.
God bless everyone.
God bless everyone. Thank you.